Part 14, Chapter 4. The small boy sped on feet of fire through the underground passages of the dungeons of the castle. He was soaked with the rain that fell outside. His bonnet was askew. His eyes were glowing with the urgency of a message he had carried for a 2-mile sprint through the dawn twilight. He identified a room ahead and tore into it, shouting,
"Prince Donaldine! Prince Donaldine! Wake up! Wake up!"
Donaldine had just settled down in his own room, in his own plaid blanket for a nice, comfortable snooze, his first in quite some time. The small boy was wrestling with excited hands to light a candle dip with a ratchet flint device. So it was Prince Donaldine now. They only called him that on feast days, or when somebody wanted a favor. His uncle, chief of Clan Fergus, was the last of the Stuarts and entitled to be called king. But he never made anything of it. The light was burning now. It shone upon the sparsely furnished stone-walled room. It showed the rain-drenched, excited, black-eyed boy, Bitty MacLeod.
"Your Squire Dwight! Your Squire Dwight has sent a message who he say is most urgent!"
Ah, this was different. Donaldine got up and reached for his clothes. Squire Dwight. Probably Dwight had used that because co-pilot would be an unknown word to this child.
"Your gillies are afoot, a settling mount. Your squire has said it was most urgent."
Donaldine glanced at his watch. It meant that the 12-hour radio silence was over. That was all. Probably a babble of news. Donaldine had no idea at all that things had gone other than successfully at the other mine sites, or that they'd succeeded at the compound. He got back into his flight clothes. No hurry. He took his time. What a busy night it had been. His and Dwight's plan had been to bring the chiefs across the sea to celebrate the victory. They had landed both ships on a flat place, 2 miles off so as not to shock the people. And he had borrowed a horse from a startled farmer he had known and ridden in. He had gotten his uncle, chief of Clan Fergus, out of bed, and gillies had flown to light the fires on the hills to gather the clans to hear the news. The mine site in Cornwall was no more. They would be free to roam the whole of England. The chief was very fond of his nephew, Donaldine, who was, in fact, his heir. He liked Donaldine's style, a true Scot. He had listened and raptured as Donaldine had given him a thumbnail, but torrential, account of all their doings. And if Donaldine were a bit incautious, the chief gave his attention while making very sure to reserve judgment and act in a wise way on the general scene, without spoiling Donaldine's flair. So he had ordered the beacons lighted. He was cautiously thrilled. Donaldine had then gone to see a lass, and had asked her to marry him, and she had said,
"Oh yes, oh yes, oh yes, Donaldine."
That attended to, he had come home for a nice snooze. Bitty seemed to be trying to remember something else. He was hopping from one bare foot to the other, squinting up his eyes, wiping at his nose. Then the boy seemed to abandon his effort. Donaldine was almost dressed. The boy's eyes caught the sword on the wall. It was a claymore, used in battles and for ceremony. It was a real clayed hemore, 5 feet long, not just a basket-hilt saber. Bitty was gesturing at it, indicating the prince should wear it. Donaldine shook his head to signify no, he wasn't going to take it this time. When he saw the eagerness die in Bitty's eyes, Donaldine relented. He took it down and handed it to him.
"All right, but you carry it."
The sword was a foot taller than the boy. Worship, awe, and joy sprang up in the boy again as he draped the hanger around his neck. Donaldine checked his gear and went out. The castle passages and halls were aswarm with gillies. They had Lochaber axes in their belts and were bustling around with 100 chores in preparation for a gathering of the clans. Donaldine had really thrown a firebrand into the scene. Nobody had been briefed. They didn't know what was going on. Dunaldine had come home. Orders had been given. Somebody said the Cyclo mine site was no more. There was an awful lot to do. The ancient ruin had remained a ruin above ground so as to attract minimal attention from drones that had gone over for centuries. Some said the place had once been the seat of Scottish kings. Its dungeons had been expanded, and it was a fortress in itself. Two gillies had Dunaldine's own horse saddled, and it was prancing about. The gillies were smiling broad welcomes to Dunaldine. He mounted, and at a signal they tossed the boy up behind him, clayed him o'er and all. It was raining. A storm apparently had moved in. It had been clear when they landed, but now the dawn was thick with overcast. It was at that moment that Biddy MacLeod remembered the rest of the message.
"Your squire,"
he said to Dunaldine's back.
"Also say, to squiggle."
The boy's accent was thick, not the accent of an educated Scot.
"To what?"
demanded Dunaldine.
"I misremembered. I couldn't think of the word,"
apologized the boy.
"But it did sound like squiggle."
"Scramble?"
asked Dunaldine. The word that meant emergency takeoff.
So 'twas!
Dunaldine was off like a shot, and 2 miles were never eaten up so fast by a horse. They came plunging to a stop on the flat-topped knoll. Dunaldine looked wildly about. Only the passenger plane was there. He flung himself off the horse and flung the reins to the boy. He opened the door and leaped into the passenger plane, reaching for the radio. And then Dwight landed nearby, startling the horse into frantic plunging that lifted the boy and the sword off the ground at every rear. Dunaldine raced over to Dwight.
"It's gone now,"
said Dwight. There had been no radio messages from the compound. Dwight, as arranged, had faithfully stayed on watch. He had waited for any break in radio silence and the end of the silence itself. The time period had ended, but pilots, not hearing from the compound and Robert the Fox, had not opened up. But something else peculiar had happened. Dwight had picked up a cyclo conversation on the planetary plane band, very loud and clear. It seemed loud enough to be within 1,000 miles or so, maybe more. Hard to tell.
"What did they say?"
demanded Dunaldine.
"I got it all on a disc,"
said Dwight. He started the disc. It said,
"Nup, you crap brain, wake up."
Dwight said he had at once sent the boy to tell Dunaldine to scramble, and then he himself had gone straight up. Yes, the sudden roar of Dwight's own engines was there on the disc. The disc played on.
"Drone,"
said Dunaldine.
"Zit? There was a transport chief named Zit."
"Well, he was out there someplace in a drone,"
said Dwight. He had gone up as high as he could go, about 200,000 feet, as fast as he could go.
"Almost torn my heart and lungs out with gravity,"
said Dwight. Then he heard complete instructions in Cyclo about re-landing on top of a drone in front of a door so Zit could get out of the drone.
"There's no drone that big. Not that I know of."
Dwight had turned on every search instrument he had. The transmission had been coming from the northwest. He had sped in that direction. He had gotten it on his scope. It was traveling 302 miles per hour, a very positive blip. It was clear weather where the thing had been. This cloud cover and rain was ahead of it. He played some more transmission. Somebody named Snit was still in the drone, but no explanation why. This was mad, because drones didn't have pilots. But how could anybody fly anybody out of a drone? And then somebody was taking fuel out of the drone in an ore basket, and the other Cyclo said he was leaving the drone.
"And why are you here?"
demanded Dunaldine, turning toward the passenger plane.
"Why didn't you attack it?"
"It blew up. I saw it visual. Eyeball. It looked like 30 lightning storms. It curved down. It probably went into the sea. I scanned the whole area. There was a little blip left. Probably when it sank it had some debris. And then that was gone. It just isn't out there anymore on any scope. so I came back here.
Dunedain played the disc through again. Dunedain pulled out the instrument recorders. They told the same story. Heat, and then gone. Dunedain looked at the sky.
You better go back up there and patrol in that direction.
There won't be any blip. And this overcast is high. The thing was flying at about 5,000 feet, and you won't be able to see a thing visually. The overcast goes up to at least 10. There's no blip.
Finished Dwight. Dunedain turned and looked at the castle ruin, gaunt and very old in the morning rain and mist. 2 miles away, and it was drifting in and out of visibility. What was that all about? Had the Battle of the Compound been lost? What drone? And why had it blown up? The clan chiefs would be assembling, and he had a lot of things to do today.